Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Daniel Foster, news editor at National Review Online, is in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives as usual. And Dan, we've kind of been raking some Republicans over the coals lately, whether it's amnesty or some other things. And now in the good martini, we're praising some and we're not so happy with others. It's related to yesterday's defeat of the farm bill in the House of Representatives. The final vote was 234 against to 195 in favor of. The GOP leadership apparently thought they had a chance to get this over the finish line, although the final vote, they claim, is a little bit more lopsided than it really would have been. Some folks just saw that it wasn't going to pass, so then they changed their votes to vote against it. Essentially, this worked in two different ways. Democrats thought there was way too much in terms of cuts to the food stamp program, about $2 billion annually over 5 years. Republicans, at least those who voted against it, the majority of Republicans voted for it, but those who voted against it said there's still way too much bloat in this farm bill. It's the same problem year after year. There's way too much in subsidies, and we've got to start cutting back. And so while the Senate has passed this thing, it's back to the drawing board on the House, and thanks, at least in some part, to people who are looking out for our wallet.
I think there's two stories here. The part of me that hated the farm bill and still hates it is happy that the bill was defeated, but the part of me that worries about John Boehner's ability to lead the House of Representatives is worried that he'd let the bill get to the floor and lose a floor vote. I mean, make no mistake, the farm bill was a big turd, to use an unkind word. You could talk about the food stamp program. You know, there are different opinions about it. I think as far as welfare programs go, it's one of the better ones. I mean, that doesn't mean there still isn't a lot of fraud in it, and it's bad news for America, however you slice it, that enrollment in food stamps has basically doubled since about 2007. That's bad. And I think, you know, the House GOP and the Senate GOP, too, to a certain extent, wanted to modestly scale back the size of the food stamp program. But it's the rest of this stuff that really bugs me. It's the corporatism and the, you know, pork by another name. And there's a dairy price control program in the bill that, I mean, this is the kind of thing, you know, Joe taxpayer doesn't necessarily read about. But, you know, there's basically a Soviet style, early days of FDR style cartel for controlling the price of milk. And dairy farmers would basically be forced to participate in it or be taxed if they didn't. So, I mean, there's a lot of really crappy old school corporatism in this bill, and it was a bad bill, so it was good that it was defeated and good for the Republicans who voted against it, but bad for Boehner and the House GOP that they didn't know what was going down.
Yeah, vote counting needs to definitely get better, especially as we get on to even more critical issues if there ever is an immigration bill that makes it to the floor and lots of other things down the pike. On to martini number two now, and on to the immigration debate. Jim and I talked yesterday in this very martini about the Corker-Hoven Amendment, and while the infusion of resources to the border is impressive, it still comes after initial legalization, and there's no actual mandate for results, and that's kind of got us worried that so many Republicans are warming up to this without those provisions being dealt with. But Dan Holler over at the Heritage Foundation looks at it in a different way. And he says essentially the Gang of Eight flip-flopped on border security because they knew they needed to buy the votes of Republicans to get this thing not only over the 60-vote threshold, but possibly over 70 to send it over to the House with a lot of momentum. And he writes it like this. It required a sweeping flip-flop from the Gang of Eight members like Lindsey Graham, who opposed a separate amendment saying, "It's kind of odd. We think sequestration's a good thing, but we're going to throw money at the border. That's a little schizophrenic," unquote. Graham's skepticism, Holler continues, evaporated when he realized he could buy off his fellow Republicans with a bunch of money. The Gang of Eight's amnesty bill was already about big government and the mentality of those fawning over the amendment drafted by Senators Menendez and Schumer and introduced by Corker and Hoven confirms Washington's addiction to spending is not yet over. He goes on to say, and thanks to Dick Durbin, we know that this is nothing more than a fig leaf for amnesty. He said the only reason Democrats are willing to support Schumer, Corker, Hoven is because it doesn't stand in the way of citizenship. And so, Dan, besides being happy that I could actually say Schumer, Corker, Hoven without stumbling, it suggests that there isn't really a lot that we should be overly excited about here in the way this gets done, as is the case with a lot of things in Washington, makes us hold our nose.
Exactly. The point isn't, and it's never for real conservatives, not to use that only real conservatives construction, but the point is never just to spend more on X, obviously. That's not what we're about. conservatives and Republicans in both houses have thought that if we're gonna do anything like an amnesty, if we're going to expand legal immigration, then one of the things that we need to do first is make sure that particularly our southern border is well protected and that our current immigration laws are enforced. So it was never really about throwing more money at it, and it was about the very things that they removed, that they sort of gutted from the Cornyn Amendment en route to the Corker version, this fig leaf version. It was about those things. It was about, you know, a mandate for a certain amount of success, about a trigger before we do any of this other stuff, you know, securing the border first. You know, I never had particularly high hopes that that was going to happen, because it's just like anything else with Democrats. If you trade tax cuts for spending increases, the spending increases happen and the tax cuts never do. Or, you know, vice versa, if you trade tax increases for spending cuts, the tax increases always happen and the spending cuts never do. So, I mean, I didn't really expect this trade of border security for amnesty to work. But this isn't even, I mean, this doesn't even have, they call it a fig leaf. This isn't even a fig leaf. This is just we'll throw some more money at the problem and some more unionized government jobs. I mean, it's not really a big win for Republicans.
On to martini number three now. And on to Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel. You know, we haven't seen or heard much of him since the confirmation battle a few months ago. But he was giving a speech, I believe, in his home state of Nebraska. He had talked about a number of different things, including the announced peace talks that are now starting that include the Taliban, which a lot of people find awkward. And he made mention of that. And then he was taking questions. And here's what happens. You're going to see a really long, awkward pause here. Just let that play out, just so you can feel the awkwardness in the room as Hagel deals with it.
Okay, so who has a way up in the back there? You're not a member of the Taliban, are you? Or, okay.
Mr. Secretary, I'm Robin Gandhi. I'm an assistant professor at UNO.
Dan, if the Republican had done this, this would have been front page news. The fact that Hagel, first of all, would joke that someone that looks Asian, obviously this guy seems to be from India, was a member of the Taliban would be huge outrage, and it should be huge outrage. And the fact that a person who is of Indian descent probably isn't Afghani.
Right. Well, you said if a Republican had done this, don't forget, Greg, he's a Republican.
He is a Republican.
Right? Thanks for playing that, by the way, because I am allergic to awkwardness, so that really made me cringe. You know, I saw the video yesterday. It was hard to watch. Hagel says that he didn't see the questioner when he made the joke, which I guess is an excuse. And it also is consistent with the fact that he lacks any vision for foreign policy or defense policy. So I guess I'll take his word that he didn't see the questioner. But yeah, I think a lot of us warned that Hagel was going to be an embarrassment in ways large and small. This is an example of one of the small ways that he'll be an embarrassment. Let's hope it doesn't get any worse.
Dan, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you later.
You too, Greg.
Daniel Foster, news editor at National Review Online, in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us. Have a great weekend, and please join us on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.